Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hello there, this is Taste Matters on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your guest host today, Isabella Wojcik, coming to you from the James Beard Foundation and bountiful cloudy Bushwick today. Thanks for joining us. So my guest today is one of my favorite writers on the topic of food, certainly, and travel. And I'm very pleased to kind of have a conversation with him about what he does and sort of the restaurant world and the food world from his perspective. So this topic is really, we're calling it critical taste. Welcome to the show, Jay Chessis, who is currently the restaurant critic for Time Out New York. I think you've been doing that for about 4 years, if I'm correct.
Right.
And I know that you have lots of experience in writing food criticism, travel writing, and writing. So we'll get to that in a moment. But thank you again for joining us. And for anyone who's listening live from 11 to 11:30, please call in if you have questions or you're inspired to 718-497-2128. You can certainly tweet your question to @TasteMattersHRN, info@HeritageRadioNetwork.com if you feel inspired to email it, but do it quickly. All right. So welcome, Jay, to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you're the restaurant critic. So let's go to the beginning. I'd like to know more about your background and how you got to be a food writer and to hold, to hold this current position. So you're born, and then what happened?
I was born actually overseas. I grew up moving around most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a diplomat, so I was born in the French Caribbean and lived in the Bahamas, West Africa, Paris. I guess Paris is where I really developed the food bug, mm-hmm. Being a teenager in Paris.
Wow.
And then I guess in college I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I would follow my father into the diplomacy game, but sort of had a crisis of conscience and decided to follow my food interest instead. And after college attended the Culinary Institute of America outside of New York,
mm-hmm.
and thought I would become a chef. Midway through that, I had another crisis and decided that the chef game was seemed too all-encompassing for me and too all-consuming. And there was I found that there was no room for other interests if I were to go full-time into being a chef. So while working at Citronelle Restaurant in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm. Sure, Michelle Richard.
Yep, I decided that I would become a writer and got a job at a small local newspaper in Virginia, and sort of it went from there. I left the food world behind, went to journalism school, and after that I sort of pursued more straight news journalism, magazine writing and that sort, and along the way sort of stumbled back into food. I wasn't doing food writing at all, except for sort of very small occasional pieces.
Right.
Related to, I did a profile of a chef, somewhat unflattering, years ago before I really became a food writer. And my food writing career began sort of at the top. Just by sort of random chance, I wound up becoming the restaurant critic at Gourmet magazine, mm-hmm. Through a contact and through a random story pitch, and that's how what led me to where I am today.
Wow, what an amazing door to have open for you! Was restaurant criticism at Gourmet? Was it sort of a positive profile of selected restaurants, or was it true criticism? You sort of good, bad, or whatever, but there was the opinion. How was that voice in Gourmet?
The point at Gourmet was to write about important restaurants. Mm-hmm. I was the New York critic, and there was a California critic, and that had been the sort of the setup for 50 years. And restaurants that were important on the national scale or international scale, and whether that was positive or negative, I mean, most of it were talking about restaurants that were exciting and therefore probably positive. But along the way, you know, the first molecular gastronomy restaurant opens in New York, WD-50, and I wound up writing a not so flattering review, but it was an important restaurant. So, mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay. First of all, I want to make sure I mention your website, which I think is just excellent. It's a great collection of your writing. I like the way that it's succinctly kind of organized into food, travel, crime. I couldn't help delve into that section. And I was so curious, are you going to be like a pulpy fiction writer? Like, and then the dame walked into my office kind of thing. Or was it going to be, you know, newsworthy sort of, news stories involving crime? So I read a couple of pieces, which were very fascinating and interesting. I think one was about the cruise ship industry and kind of the not often spoken about, disappearances mm-hmm. of passengers. I also noticed it was in Miami. A couple of the pieces were from Miami. Did you live in Miami for a time? Was there a time when you were there, or is that just happened to be the posting of your story?
That was a coincidence. I did live in South Florida, mm-hmm. but not when I wrote that okay. story. I did write quite a number of crime stories when I lived down there. That was before food writing. I actually went to high school for a couple of years down there, boarding school, and I worked at a weekly newspaper where I did long-form crime writing, mostly.
So you've got this background where you've lived all over, you grew up kind of internationally. I imagine, diplomatic parents must have instilled some, through the exposure of just the geography, but probably through their work, they must have exposed you to some pretty memorable food experiences, dining experiences, high and low end, but just you must have had inevitably that kind of exposure. Are they big food fans? Was it a big food family, or was that not necessarily part of their, how was that environment for you?
It was a big food focus growing up, especially during the years overseas. I was only in the U.S. for a few years. My father was a very adventurous diner and mm-hmm. instilled that in me from almost birth. He always used to tell stories about me going to Rome with them when I was probably 4 years old and seeing, a stand selling whole fried baby fish and saying, "Daddy, I want that." I ate weird things from the age of four on, and I even sort of kept a informal log of all the weird things that I'd eaten, and sort of it was a point of challenge for me mm-hmm. to sort of collect unusual things, and my dad and I would do that together.
Very cool. Okay, so here we are today. You're working for Time Out New York. So I wanted to mention jchessis.com. No.
Just chessis.com.
Chessis.com. Yep. And certainly Time Out New York. You write great reviews. You've got a beautiful voice in the way that you capture and evoke kind of the spirit of a place, the food, and certainly what their philosophy is like, what they're trying to achieve as a restaurant. And I think, I've tremendously enjoyed reading the reviews to the places that I've been. It felt like it perfectly captured what I experienced. To the places that I haven't, it really, it just made me really hungry for the experience. What's it like for you? What's it like to be a restaurant reviewer? What's the job like when you started? What were some of the expectations set for you? How was it presented? Like, this is your job. How was that presented? Is that still true today? You have such a wealth of experience to this point. What's it like? Pardon the musical interlude coming from Roberta's. Keep on going.
I think Gourmet and Time Out are different. Mm-hmm. The Gourmet reviews were much longer and were not supposed to sound like restaurant reviews. The point was to write in a more freeform way. The Time Out reviews are more straightforward and much shorter, so I have to say a lot in a small amount mm-hmm. of space. But I try to give context, history, culture, a sense of place, and do it in a lively way. So informative, entertaining, but I can't go too far out in left field with the Time Out reviews, whereas I might have been able to.
Mm-hmm. What's the process like for you? How do you start? Do you have a list of how do you get informed about restaurants? The readers get informed by reading your columns and other food writing, or social media or word of mouth. How do you learn about what's happening?
I mean, there's such a wealth of sources these days with the food blogs cover every minutia of a restaurant opening, from the, you know, the plywood reports, mm-hmm. and so I keep up on all of that and follow a million Twitter feeds and read all of my competitors, and so I sort of have a list of all of the restaurants that are coming or that have just opened, and there's sort of a consensus happens in New York about what are the important restaurants. You know, a big deal chef from out of town is coming. We have to check him out. There's, you know, the 3-star chef opening his little burger joint. We have to check that. There's sort of, you know, I look at the important restaurants. Unfortunately, it's hard to find the little off the beaten path hole in the wall that either I stumble upon or somebody suggests. But often I don't find those and I miss out. But in terms of the important restaurants, they're just sort of, there's, everyone's covering them, and there's sort of a consensus that happens in New York within okay. this community.
And so does that missive come to you, or are you the one who sets that tone? Like, we need to, for the paper, cover this, and this is what I think. Like, how do you get dictated
I have a list,
or you do?
I have a list, and then I run it by my editor. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this? And sometimes I say, oh, here are these 6 restaurants. Let's do these. And she says, I like those 4, but these 2... maybe not, or they need some time, or they're not for our readership, or whatever that is.
But, right. So who's your readership, by the way, since you mentioned that? Is there an age, target age group? Is there...
I mean, I don't necessarily think of a target readership, mm-hmm. but I think the magazine does. Sort of a younger readership, maybe less affluent, less spendy than the New York Times average diner. So somewhat younger, but of course, but very engaged with the food scene, because food is the new...
Oh, food is the new everything.
The new
right?
everything. Is, so.
It's the new band. Exactly. It's the new black. It's the new everything. We're talking to Jay Chessis, who is the restaurant critic for Time Out New York, and this is Taste Matters on Heritage Radio Network. And we're talking about kind of the scope of your job. So you pick a restaurant. How often do you go? How do you go? Do you make a reservation under your name? Do you just show up? Like, what's that process like for you?
If it's a place that I could just wander in and not need a reservation, I would prefer to do that. But otherwise, I reserve under another name that's not my name. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they don't know that it's me. And I go a couple times with a couple other diners and try as much of the menu as I can. I don't necessarily have the luxury of being able to go 6 times as I used to with Gourmet, but...
Wow. Although that could be tedious, too, if you are... Yep. Like, you've surmised a place, you've got it, and I have to go back 5 more times.
Yep.
How do you look at a menu when you see the restaurant menu? Do you try to read every line? Do you start off with a particular section? Do you...
Well, menus are so vast these days and overwhelming that it is much more difficult than ever to try to find your way through a menu with all the side dishes and pre-appetizers and bar snacks and a gazillion right. different options. Of course, smart restaurateurs and chefs put what we call critic bait on there, which mm-hmm. is sort of weird dishes and weird animal parts that may not necessarily be big sellers, but they know that the critics are going to get those, and I do get those dishes. So
tripe and offal and other sorts of
the weirder
octopus desserts.
The weirder, more offbeat the dish, the more likely it is that I'm going right. to order it. I generally tend not to order a green salad or that sort of thing, mm-hmm. but a simple soup. I'm looking for something that I can say something interesting about.
Right. So. Okay. Very nice. So let's take a short break, I think. This is Taste Matters, Heritage Radio Network. My guest is Jay Chessis, and we'll be right back to further this conversation.
Sea salt. Enjoy.
Enjoy. Life is a dish, best served hot, and a dish is a book with a menacing plot, and a plot is a song dipped in sauce that was simmered in a pan with a demi-glaze. I'm just a kid in a candy shop of culinary dreams that can't be stopped, on the search for the perfect ingredients to post on my social medias.
You are pathetic, we're not photogenic.
What?
Hurry it up, we're getting old.
Don't talk back.
Come down here and taste us, don't humiliate us. No one gives a damn about what you
host. Artisan bread dipped in artisan cheese, dipped in artisan nuts, dipped in artisan greens. Artisan heirloom radicchio, this carpaccio's effing ridiculo. A little foie gras and tuna tartare, black truffle butter chickweed, ha ha ha. I'm just a guy with a camera, in your feed with my foods as my canvasser. Lobster bisque, buttered lightly, I see you in a bowl and I need you inside me. I love soup, don't call me a Nazi, I'm more like the culinary paparazzi, or gastronomic and elite.
At Whole Foods Market, we review each and every product that hits our shelves. Our cleaning products are no exception. Our EcoScale ranking system rates each household cleaner so you know what you're getting. Now, during Earth Month and any time of the year, learn more at WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Work it.
And we're back. So joining me is Jay Chessis, who's the restaurant critic for Time Out New York. And I hope you enjoyed that song interlude that Jay picked out. I love it. It's called Eat It, Don't Tweet It. It's a YouTube sensation. And it's a collaborative project between Key of Awesome and American Hipster. And it talks about, as the title suggests, eat it, don't tweet it. It makes fun of the current kind of food obsession that we're living in. One of my favorite thoughts is that my friends would go to Japan and they would come back and talk about how obsessed with food the Japanese are, how amazing it would be to be in a place like that. And I think finally, for the first time in this country, in this culture, we've arrived at that point. Certainly through technology, through different social media aspects, we've got this awareness about food that's out there and interesting things being done with food. But it's more than that. I feel like it's more than just a hobby. It's become this obsession about being cool. Cool through your knowledge of food, cool through chefs you know, places you've been, happenings. And certainly New York has such a richness of all of these kinds of experiences. Underground dining clubs and so on and so forth. So you're a restaurant critic. You know, we've talked about you try to maintain a sense of anonymity, a sense of, you know, I'm here to do my job. And these people are running amok with food camp, you know, food pictures, food blogs, places to post what they've eaten, when. What do you think of all that? Does that in any way change the job that you have to do? Do you feel like the audience perception of what you're doing is changing? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I don't necessarily think it changes my job. I mean, I have to bring added value and more value than Yelp and all the and everyone tweeting about their food. And I think there's much more to writing a compelling piece about a restaurant than simply, you know, running down what the dishes are and how great the chef is. So that's why I, you know, building in context and the history and having a sense of, you know, the years that I've spent eating and accumulating this knowledge. Of course, the average Joe can also accumulate a ton of knowledge just by eating out, and people are eating out more than ever, and that's sort of changing the landscape a bit. But I mean, there is an expectation, I guess. It seems that even the professional critics will tweet and will blog. I don't have a blog. I tweet somewhat, but not nearly as much as my colleagues, I would say.
And I'm Are you feeling pressure to do that? Do you feel like there's...
I feel a mix of pressure, but on the other hand, I'm not really sure how to navigate that landscape, because if you're keeping a low profile in a restaurant, you can't tweet that you're... I mean, some critics do tweet that they've been at a restaurant that they're about to review. I'm not sure if that's appropriate, but I tweet about things that are sort of off the beaten path, that have nothing to do with what I'm writing about, or maybe tangentially related. But
still on the topic of food or unrelated?
Related to food only.
Okay. So let's talk about... Do you have any food allergies, food issues? Do you personally, you know, when you go out to eat, as a reviewer, obviously you're trying to maintain as much of an objective frame of mind, but do you personally have food issues that then you have to kind of work around?
Someone wrote an article actually for the Village Voice where she interviewed restaurant critics about their food dislikes, and as I said in that piece, the only thing that I sort of have a visceral reaction to is mayonnaise, which
really?
Of course is abundant everywhere. I mean, I have a sort of snobbish approach to mayonnaise. Homemade mayonnaise I'm fine with, mm-hmm. but sort of slathered on Hellman's from the jar, I can't handle it.
So I shouldn't ask you Hellman's or Miracle Whip. I shouldn't ask you that question.
Exactly. So a classic American tuna fish sandwich or tuna salad or, you know, sandwich with a big slather of mayonnaise, that's going to be a problem for me. I would say that's pretty much it. Maybe other junk food, like, you know, if I get a cheese steak, I'm not going to get it with Cheese Whiz, but...
But you probably don't come across that too frequently,
right,
in your line of work. So it might have to do with, you know, your personal dining choices.
Yep.
So mayonnaise makes me think of Wiley Dufresne, WD-50, groundbreaking restaurant, where he's made his technique for fried mayonnaise famous. Have you had it? And is that not even in the realm of
I don't believe I've had it. I'm not sure if he had it way back when he first opened the restaurant. I actually haven't been back to WD-50 since the early days when he first opened. I would certainly try his fried mayonnaise. I assume he makes the mayonnaise with real eggs and then fries it, but as opposed to...
It feels like there's a few more steps in there than just that.
Right.
We'll have to get you a big plate and see what happens. So can you share any funny stories just from your line of work? I mean, have you been discovered, and then does something change in that process? Can you even maintain your anonymity? Can you know how are diners behaving around you? Any war stories from the trenches for us?
I would say, well, going back to the gourmet days, I was 100% anonymous. Nobody had any idea who I was. There were no pictures of me. There were no... Drew Nieperent used to joke to Ruth Reichel that the restaurant critic Jay Chess's was in fact her writing the reviews, because who is this guy?
Right.
And right towards the end of that period, I went to India to do a story for Gourmet and was interviewing was having dinner with a Bollywood heartthrob in Mumbai, and a photographer came over and took our picture, and next thing I know, my picture with this Bollywood star was in the Times of India, and it says, famous restaurant critic Jay Chess's dines with our Bollywood royalty, or whatever. So somehow that art, even though they misspelled my name, somehow that article found its way back to New York, and a chef in New York found it on the internet, and that was the first time that I know of that anyone... Mm-hmm. had come upon my picture. I do know that.
So did that change anything? I mean, did you have experiences of
I found that out
bad food
afterwards.
Suddenly disappearing?
No,
and
that was right at the
or,
end of my tenure. Okay. So as it happened, sort of the gourmet period ended shortly thereafter. And nowadays, I feel like I'm recognized occasionally. I mean, the smart restaurants, the restaurants that are really on the ball,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they know when any critic is in the restaurant. I mean, I've been at restaurants where I'm sitting one table away from the critic from the Village Voice, and then two tables away is the critic from the New York Times, and Adam Platt has just left, and it's sort of critic mayhem. And the restaurateurs, the chef, they don't know who to pay attention to.
Right.
So,
do you think that impacts? I mean, does that... you know, we talk about at the Beard Foundation all the time this idea, okay, so you're recognized, and so maybe your salad is perfect, but you're not ordering the salad. But maybe your tripe is just a little bit bigger, a little bit lusher, whatever. But you can't really change an entire restaurant, especially early on, which is when you would be reviewing it, just for that one table. You really can't. I mean, the whole mechanism has to come together. And probably the harder you try, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, your wine doesn't get delivered, the waiter mistakes, you know, a command, whatever. So do you really think anonymity is still critical to impartial reviews? How do you feel about that?
I think it is critical. I mean, maybe not. Maybe critical is taking it too far. I mean, a great restaurant, everybody is going to be treated well no matter what. I don't think it impacts the food. Rarely does it impact the food, but the service can be impacted dramatically. And there are a lot of restaurants where you're seated is as important as what's on your plate, and Siberia and all of those notions. So, of course, if they think you're somebody who deserves to be sloughed off to the side to the worst table in the house, and getting the worst table in the house can lead to an awful experience at the restaurant, even if the food is terrific.
Right.
I mean, I've had terrible, terrible service at great restaurants, and occasionally they notice, they figure out who I am halfway through the meal, and you do see a dramatic change in the service. It's mostly the service where you notice that anonymity is important. And I mean, I don't put a huge amount of emphasis on service in my reviews, but really bad service, I can't write a good review.
So. Right. Well, and of course, I mean, what you're reviewing is the whole experience. So that plays a very big part. I think I personally have had experiences where, you know, the food was fine and the restaurant ambiance and all of that, like, energy was great. But I think, you know, just a terrible waiter, someone who's inept or someone who has a very poor attitude, really ruins the whole experience. Like, you would have just preferred, you know, even worse food, but if the service was better, you would have enjoyed it and recommended it. So I completely hear what you're saying on that. So what's next for you? Do you feel like, you know, you've been here for 4 years at Time Out New York. Is there a next step in a writer's, in a critic's, you know, journey and profession? I mean, there's a burnout rate at the New York Times restaurant review column, it seems like. Is there such a thing for Time Out New York? Are you still excited and interested? I mean, restaurants are so quickly evolving, and it's such an interesting time to be eating. What are your thoughts on that? And I don't mean like, you know, are you going to reveal that you're now resigning or anything like that? But down the road at some point, where do you go from here?
Well, I'm still very excited to eat out. And the Time Out job is not all consuming the way the New York Times job is. I don't live, eat, and breathe being a Time Out restaurant critic. I actually am also a travel writer and do a lot of travel. The Time Out is, restaurant criticism in this job is one thing that I do. I don't necessarily need to change that in order to continue to evolve as a writer. Hopefully I'll be working on books, and I write long form magazine stories occasionally. That's where I'm evolving, and if I can continue to be a voice in the New York restaurant scene, I'd be happy to continue for many more years.
Wow, it's great that you have that freedom, even though it's a weekly, so you've got a weekly column to put out. So consequently, I mean, how many, do you ever cook at all at home? You went to CIA, you've got great experience there, but do you ever, or is this all about eating out?
I do cook at home once or twice a week. My wife would prefer that I cook at home more frequently. She's convinced that it would be better for our waistline if I were cooking as opposed to eating out at restaurants. But I enjoy cooking, especially, you know, on a Sunday night, going to the Green Market and making a great meal. But I also love eating out.
What's your budget like? Do you have an unlimited budget based on, like, what the decision that you make and 3 visits?
Unfortunately, I don't have an unlimited budget.
That would have been nice.
times have changed. In the gourmet era, there was a very, very large budget. The budget is more limited these days. And of course, when there's a very, very expensive restaurant, which is less and less frequent as the dining scene has become much more casual, we stretch the budget and we figure out how to make it work. But, you know, the days of spending $1,100 at Alain Ducasse. Those are
or quilted
those
giraffe. Are that's no longer even around. Jay, I think we're out of time. So I just wanted to say thank you. You've been a great guest. It's been really interesting talking to you. You're Jay Chessis. You're the restaurant critic for Time Out New York. I encourage listeners to go to chessis.com to read Time Out New York. Look for his travel pieces. And you've been listening to Taste Matters on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.